Right, well, welcome everyone to today's BIPS webinar, which is the final one for 2023, uncovering Dr. Hansi Wolf's collection, A Life Contribution to the Study of Iran and Iranian Studies with Dr. Pedram Khosrow-Nejad. Let me introduce Dr. Khosrow-Nejad. He is an adjunct professor at the School of Social Sciences at Western Sydney University, and he is the founding moderator of Anthropology of Middle East and Central Asia, the ACME network of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. He's recognized for his contribution to the fields of visual piety and material religion, war, memory, and forced displacement, gender, sexuality, race, and including slavery in modern Iran and Persianate societies, the Greater Middle East, the Central Asia, the Muslim world, and Australia. He explores the manners in which culture, memory, and visual culture are bound up in as well as influenced and altered by wider socio-political and cultural trends. He's been working since August 2019 on this very interesting project, interdisciplinary project about German civilian expatriates of Iran who had been detained by British forces in Iran in 1941 after the country's invasion in the Second World War, and then brought to Australian internment prison camps and stayed on in Australia after the end of the war. He has also recently been appointed curator of exhibitions and collection at the Grafton Regional Gallery in Australia. And without further ado and taking up any more of his time, I'm going to let Dr. Khosrow-Nejad get on with it. Again, all questions to be directed there via the Q&A function on Zoom. And Pedram, over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon, everyone. Saying hello to you from the future.
I should say good morning, by the way, because it's yes. 4 o'clock in the morning where Pedram is, and I'm sure that he has plenty of water and or coffee. So thank you very much for doing this at 4 in the morning. So well done, you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Andrew. As I said, I'm saying hello from the future. It's 4 a.m. I'm talking to you from north of New South Wales, Australia. And as it is tradition here, I would like to begin with acknowledgement to country. I would like to start by acknowledging that we are meeting today on the lands, skies, and the waters of the Banjalam, Gumbanjir, and Yegal peoples, where I'm presenting from today, and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and recognize their continuous connection to country. Country was, stay, and will be belong to the First Nation people. Thank you so much, Andrew, for introduction. I would like to say thank you, first of all, to Dr. Vesta Sarkoz-Curtis, Vice President of BIPS, Professor Andrew Newman, Outreach Director of BIPS, and especially Ms. Sylvia Ferreri, Outreach and Digitization Coordinator of Project. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to be here with you and your members and audiences for last session of BIPS Talks. Also, I would like to forward my gratitude and thanks to Wolf family, especially John and Roswitha and Hildegard Wolf, children of Dr. Hans Wolf, also members of my project, our project, which is their project. Today they are here, even it's early morning in Australia, who are helping me to develop the project together. And also I would like to thank Western Sydney University School of Social Sciences that actually the project and the entire collection is sitting there at the moment temporary until we find a good house for it. And in the end, also, I would like to thank my colleague, Dr. Mahroom Musavi, who helped the project with me to run some part of that together. So today's presentation, I try to be a storyteller, if I can be a good one. And this story will have two major parts. First is the life brief life story of Dr. Hans Wolf, which we can divide it in three major parts. The first part is between 1936 and 1941, which is during the Big Depression period until the outbreak of Second World War, his mission in Iran. Then 1941 to 1947, when he's a prisoner in Australian Second World War internment prison camp complexes. And then last part, 1963 to 1967, that he began to work again on Iran and Pakistan and end of his life. Second part of a presentation, I'm trying to develop a little bit for you the situation of collection and material. I'm going to share my screen with you to go directly to the presentation. And I hope you can see everything. Feel free to make a screenshot of whatever you like. This presentation, first and foremost, is to invite you for a brainstorming to help me about the collection. It's a very complex project, and we are doing that with empty hand and with love for the collection and material. And we will see why I wanted to do the first academic public presentation through BIPS, because BIPS is involved and was involved in the Dr. Wolf project. So Hans Wolf was born on 27th August 1907 in Lüdinghausen in Germany. And after finishing high school in Cologne, he studied and trained in Lübeck in mechanical engineering and vocational pedagogy, completing his studies just as the Big Depression period was in Europe in 20s, and he could not find, like others, easily jobs. He had some jobs in between, but he stays in Germany and continued small works until in 1936, his uncle, who had a good job in a foreign office in Berlin, help Hans to get a position to plan and set up technical engineering schools in Iran. So we should not mix that one with Tehran engineer, a German-Iran school that created in Qajar period, since Qajar period, which still is in Tehran and continue. This is another scheme, and it's like German foreign minister help to the Iranian government by the request of Reza Shah, the king of Iran at that period, to run a local engineering and technology schools. So Hans Wolf goes to Iran in 1936 and build up, let me see if my slides are good. Yes, 1936 goes to Iran with his family and settle down in Shiraz. I should add here one big parenthesis that Big Depression period, Iran became a good market for young, talented German engineers, all sorts of engineers, builders, architects, dealers, craft people. And we estimate between 5 to 10,000 civilian Germans were living in Iran between two wars during Big Depression period. And their family were there, and their children were born in Iran, including Hans Eberhard Wolf. So he arrives in Iran in 1936 and built up the first engineering school in Shiraz, where his first daughter, Hildegard, is born. And then he goes to Isfahan to build up the second school, and then the third one in Tabriz, where we have the outbreak of Second World War. He comes to Tehran and will be detained with the rest of Germans of Iran. The images that you see is Hans in the middle and with his students in Shiraz Engineering School, which is still there. All three schools are still there and continue their work. I could trace where they are at the moment and who are responsible. You can see here on the top left, the visit of Minister of Industry of Iran to the Shiraz School and how they are packing for going to Isfahan and make the second engineering school. During the opening of Shiraz School, Reza Shah will go there and congratulate Hans Wolf in person and ask him two things. Narration says, as you can see in the introduction of his book, The Traditional Crafts of Persia, that Reza Shah tell Hans, you should be very proud that today the objects, Western technical objects that he purchased from Germany, now Iranian students are making them. But I want to bring to your attention, Hans Wolf, that Iran has 7,000 years of tradition of craft, science, technology, and art. And I would like my students, new talented Iranian, learned their own technology and craft too. not only Western. Therefore, I give you a royal project. While you are in Iran, you travel all around the country, collect the information and technical material and knowledge, most importantly, of traditional craft, art, technology, and science, and add them to the curriculum of these schools, modernize them. But in the same time, you collect this information and details to write the first ever Persian encyclopedia of traditional art, craft, science, and technology. And this is how, between 1936 until 1941, while working in his teaching schools, Hans Wulff, with this royal order, traveled all around the country and collected majority, I can say, the traditional art, craft, and technology of Iran. Probably, as we can see, this is his wife, Magdalena, was her first assistant and supporter. With love, they worked all around the country. And Hans had two Leica cameras. I think he was like a lovely ethnographer, archaeologist, all around the country. There are a huge number of material that I come to there, but just wanted to show you some of his field work, photographs, working with the local people all around the country. So he was a very humble person, very professional. One of the important points about his field work in this part, 1936 to 1941, is that Hans collected all of the vernacular terms and terminologies of all sorts of crafts and guilds and wrote them in Farsi and local dialects. If he was in, like here, Shahsavan, Azerbaijan, in Azerbaijani dialect, if he was in Bakhtiari, Luri Bakhtiari, if he was in Gilan, Gilaki. And it's very important because he created, when he published his book, an appendix, which is still unique in the world. And all of those who did review his book mentioned first this appendix in the end, which is terminology of vernacular crafts and production of material, which is unique. And I can say plus 90% of those craft and material are disappeared from today's crafts of Persia. So this aspect of his work is very important. It's not topic of today to talk about the internment of civilian Germans of Persia, but anyway, Churchill was not happy that these 5 to 10,000 civilian Germans are living in Iran. With the invasion of Iran, north from Soviet army and south from British army, they were trapped anyway, and they were detained in Tehran, Shemiran, a summer quarter of German embassy, because they were refugees there for 7 weeks. By the order of British army, with the help of Iranian police, they separate by force their wife and children, deport them, very bad story, to the Germany and Austria and Denmark, to Turkey. And 488 single men were detained on Iranian territory, exceptionally with two families, 14 people. So in total, 512 of civilian Germans of Iran deported to Australia. They arrived here on Port Adelaide on November 1941. Families go to Tatura, a camp in Victoria of Australia. Helga Griffin is today with us. Thank you, Helga Jan. She's the only survivor female detainee of Germans of Iran. Helga is an active member of our project and helped in Wolf project too. And Hans Wulff, along other 488, go to single camps, internment prison camps in South Austria, in Loveday, that you can see the photo here. I would like to open a parenthesis very fast here, that these 488 people, not all of them, but majority of them, they were not simple internees. They were top-rate intellectuals and professional academics that Reza Shah invited to Iran to create the Department of Archaeology of University of Tehran. Professor Wilhelm Eilers was one of them. Professor Koch was one of them, to create the Department of Geology of University of Tehran. Karl Zubek, great musician and violinist for the Department of Music, etc. So these internees inside the camp, we are in second part of Hans Wulff's life for Iran and Iranian studies, they did amazing things in the camp that you cannot believe it, and no one in Iranian studies knows about that. First of all, they create a college inside the camp to teach other internees and they got from Red Cross the certificate as an official college. That is not our topic. But they create also for themselves a group, these elites, and we come to that, and change the lifestyle of the camp and use the knowledge of Iran, Iranian studies, Iranian craft, Iranian science and art as healing system for trauma of barbed wire disease or trauma of the imprisonment in the camps. Just give you one image here. They created two coffee houses inside the camp, as you can see, like Kashan architecture style, and use the Iranian traditional Kashani sand brick style to create these camp in Lovday and one in Tatura. Anyway, as you can see here, these 10 elites, they had their weekly meetings where they seriously work on their level of Persian literature, archaeology, history, and exchange of knowledge between themselves, create a school of Iranian studies in Second World War internment prison camp, reading and writing Hafez, Sa'di, Omar Khayyam, Ferdowsi, Attar, philosophy, and every Saturday, one of them give a professional talk. As you can see here, Hans gave a talk about the traditional craft of Persia, serious talk, they have music, many things. So these documents that you can see here are from Hans Full's personal diaries of the camp. You can see left side, he's working on Sa'di, but it's not simple. I should tell you, each of them, when you work, they were free to choose which part of poetry and Persian literature they wanted to work on it. Here you can see he selected things that shows his love for Iran and how he's missing his wife and Hildegard, first daughter, born in Shiraz. And her name is Shirin, you know, or another, Rosvita, another name. So, and as you can see here, Hans was in this image very, very clever. You can see there are about Shiraz, Khosha Shiraz o vasle bi misalash, Khodavanda negahdar az zivalash. He's very, very, very attached to Persian Shia talismanic protection verses, as you can see here, and Ayat al-Kursi, which all of us, we know why, could be used in such a situations. He was involved in craft with many of them, created this box that you can see for his daughter, Rosvita, who left him. She was one month baby when they were separated in Iran and did not see father for 8 years. The box would is tea boxes or any, you know, used boxes that they could find in the camp. I should add that Hans coming from jewelry family, and he was professional jewelers, and this is art of the camp that he made among many in the camp. This is another that he made for Hildegard, the Panchtan, as you can see, and all is designed and done by hand by Hans Wolf in the camp. Anyway, all of the Germans of Persia stay in the camp until 1947. By the order of Churchill, they could not back to Iran. Only a few of them they could, and in 1949, this is the first time that mother and three children back from Germany to Australia joined father. Between 1947 and 49, Hans had different works, nothing to do with our topic today. And when family arrives, he buy a piece of land in a suburb of Sydney and create a house that he called that Gorg Abad. Wolf's village, because his family was wolf, but he loved the Gorg Abad. And as you can see from the A to Z of this house, he used the knowledge that he gained in Iran regarding building bricks. It's amazing. I cannot go to details, but wanted to let you know how he used all of the images that you can see and knowledge from Iran and make the house. Especially, I'm fascinated by these cheminées, or whatsoever we can call it, fireplace, because he did extensively work on the system of cheminée in Iran and apply that there. In right side image, you can see John and Roswitha and the ceramic on the wall that you can see Hans designed by himself. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim made it in Qom during his second trip in Iran after a period. Anyway, as you can see here, just wanted to let you know, here you can see the label Ghorghabad, the house. And many famous people lived with them. And as you can see, maybe you see the lady, Maria von Trapp, the famous sound of music. This is the real one, Maria, who lived a few weeks with them, with Wolf family. And I think it was interesting just to mention how they loved Iran. But the house also was many, many material culture from Iran. This luster or lamp made by Hans himself, and is exactly based on it's very famous, you can see Darius, the great epigraphy from Persepolis in their house. So I don't want to go beyond that, because just wanted to mention how they loved Iran and how he applied Iranian art and craft in his personal life too. So after the camp, we have two periods of his activity. Immediately in 1950s, he became member of Department of Engineering Technology Department at University of New South Wales, and with connections that he finds, he contacts everyone. And he enrolled also in master program and then PhD program there. And UNESCO find him. He make a very, very important contract with the Smithsonian and run a project to continue his work that Reza Shah gave him before the internment period to continue that. But nothing happened until 1953, because he was very clever. Before being interred in Iran, he put all of the collection of Reza Shah project in the safe of German bank in Tabriz. The Dark was his friend. And he could retrieve the entire collection intact, except two cameras, in 1953 in Australia. So 1953 is when he can begin again and work on his project, enrolled in Department of Engineering Department and Technology, UNSW, become assistant in the lab of this department, contact with the Smithsonian and run the project. Smithsonian asking, continue your project, we'd like you to continue that. But in the Smithsonian Department of Anthropology and Archaeology, we want to create a contemporary museum of technology of Middle East. And your work in Iran is very important for us. So communication that you can see in this part of slides is related to his communication that with the Smithsonian and Iranian embassy in US, and it's huge. He kept everything. So I come to that. So, he will go to Iran for this project in two seasons and collect around 2,500 objects only for Smithsonian. They are sitting in the basement of Smithsonian somewhere, and they don't care anymore what Hans did there. No one worked on that. There is no details. I'm happy to answer a question about this. He had two seasons of work in Iran. In one in 1964 and one in 1965, and then two seasons in Pakistan, 1966 and 1967. During his mission in Iran, he lived in BIPS at Golhak, and also he delivered talks for BIPS. I could not go beyond because I have no time to go along to all documents, but I'm happy here to share with you the letter that he and his daughter prepared when they wanted to leave Iran and say thank you. And you can see the British instead of Persians is one of them, but there are a lot of communications while he was in BIPS and work there. In 1963, he finished his PhD and contact left and right, and then MIT accept to publish his book. In 1965, he goes 8 weeks to MIT publishing house in US to prepare his book, and book will be published in 1966. He sent the book to everyone, and as you can see, he was in touch with many, many after war specialists of Iran. This is here a letter of Professor Arthur Upham Pope, who at that time was in University of Pahlavi, American University of Iran. when he returned to Iran, dedicate a copy of his book to King of Iran, Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, the son of Reza Shah, in respect of the project run initially by his father, Reza Shah. We have this amazing record in the collection. His book was, you know, had reviewed more than 30 times, including by Anne Lambton. And unfortunately, Hans could not read them because he passed away in 1967. But, you know, more than 30 reviews. And also he was in touch with all researchers, mostly historian of Islamic art, archaeology, historians of the Middle East regarding technology. Here we can see left side is communication, one of the communications that he had with Charles Winkelson. And it's amazing, in the collection we have all of this communication. And he published and interviewed many things. One of the important articles is the connection between the glazing techniques that he found with his daughter during his project in Iran while living in Bibs, about the connection between this turquoise glazing technique between Egypt and Iran. Anyway, so he published more than 30 articles in mostly American and English speakers, but there are more than unfinished because he could not finish them, and now they are in collection here. You have some of them. Unfortunately, Hans passed away during his second season work of the Smithsonian in Pakistan and was buried there in 31st December 1967. So we are in December too. I think it's cool, nice, connection. Family wanted the body to stay there where he did work. So second part of presentation here begins regarding the detail of collection is extensive. In collection, we have around 5,000 photographs, intact, untouched, more than 15 diaries regarding the 1936-1941 in Iran, and around five during two seasons of work in Bibs for a Smithsonian. Each craft has different folder. Here, for example, is one of the 10 folders of weaving. We are in Yazd, and amazing traditional looms that Zari Bafi loom, Mahmal Bafi loom, velvet, they are disappeared all. And all photographs, you know, they were stamped, dated, and they have these details. I just kept one of them, another folder on agriculture. All of the notes, as I told you, is they are intact, kept very, very amazingly by him. But there are tons of photo note cards regarding field. Each of them has, as you can see here, codes related to the folder. But it's a huge project. So there are 5,000, I think, photographs and negatives. There are 5,000. Such a fish that you can see here, and the details, and many, many others that are still intact since 1960s are in boxes. There are a bunch of Dinkadis and films that are even there to open them because, you know, they are delicate. Here we need to talk about collection management, which is very, very important. I should thank again here, you see Dr. Mahru Musavi, because we are both in Sydney, helped a lot to develop some part of project. Recently in a European Conference of Iranians in Leiden, we had a special panel chair together with another colleague, Dr. Zenhari from Germany, and we had amazing seven speakers specifically about Wolf collection importance. And there are objects in the collection that legally came out of Iran, collected during the first season, not the Smithsonian season, as you can see, and they're in the collection. You can see them here. So in 2020, Wolf siblings and family went to the solicitors and they deliver everything to the collection, and I'm temporary keeper of the entire collection until find a safe place for the entire collection and material culture. I can confirm with all of my effort, none of the Australian museums or institutions at universities are interested. Unfortunately, this is one of the reasons that I opened the call today for all colleagues who have some idea and want to share and help in this regard. Because I'm just a keeper, temporary keeper, not the owner. And So Hans Wolf was a fighter. Hans Wolf died in 1967, age of 60. If only he had 10 more years to continue. He did his PhD in a very old age, you know, and a hard worker, lover of Iran, you know, and a loved person, amazed by Iranian culture. He stays and belong to traditional school of Oriental studies, definitely of German school, I can say. And today we did write also to MIT Press. We returned the right of the book for republication of book to the collection again. So this is where I think I stop, and just want to say that the collection is amazing, intact since Hans Wolf prepared that. It's not huge. We can talk about around. I think here I can stop sharing. We have around probably 30 to 35 boxes, separate from objects, the material and documentation, all communication that he had with different researchers, family communications when he was in the camp, all of the handwriting diaries and typed ones, reports of first period of work for Reza Shah project, and also Smithsonian in Iran, Smithsonian in Pakistan, and it's ready to go. But you know, I'm the only one here, and I should say that Hans Wolf is only one of the internees that in our project we are working on. Since 2019, I stay in Australia only for this project. We found one by one, I found children of civilian Germans of Iran. Now we have a group. We work together in a reciprocal project. Step by step, we find out what we have in the collections. Another amazing collection is Gerçek family, belong to Helga's family. Her father was a chief engineer of Kamsax in Iran. And for instance, just to let you know, the Tunele Kanduvan Tunnel, or Veresk Bridge, Polevereski, done by Helga's father, with amazing photography, again, objects from Iran. So we do our best. But I have 2 minutes to wrap up everything. Why I bring it to you today, this very fast, brief visual historiography of Wolf and Wolf collection, is to have understanding the person who loved Iran and Persian craft and technology and science. Even maybe his look that period was a little bit good for his period. Today is old-fashioned, we know that. Orientalist, we know that. But the material per se is intact. All of the material that he collected, especially visually and notes and terminologies, are intact and can help different students, researchers, and there are huge different type of publication that you can extract from the collection. I think we can digitize them, put them online for free for everyone, but it's not mine. It's something that needs support, big support, collective support, and work together to bring it to the attention of everyone. Especially, I think students of Iranian studies are eager, and the conference in Leiden a few months ago show us that there is huge interest. So thank you so much. Don't hesitate to run your question through Andrew. You can email me wherever you have any question, or if you need any document and material from the collection, I'm happy to share that with you. Thank you so much. And you, Andrew, back to you.
Thank you very much, Pedro. That was absolutely fascinating. I had a couple of questions here, both historically, but also in terms of the crafts themselves. Were there, so historically in this period when he was rounded up and then sent away, what was his family was still back in Iran?
No. The question is that real story is we should ask why Iran was invaded. Iran was invaded because what is happening exactly today in Ukraine happened in Iran. Iran was neutral. Reza Shah was clever because of First World War. He never wanted to enter into the war. But Churchill was very, very anxious about the oil pipes in the south of Iran, and also the biggest colonial of empire in India. He knew if Hitler attacked Poland, the second target is Russia and then Iran. So therefore, they needed to stop Germans on the border of Russia. How we can do that? With the US, we transfer arms and armors through Iranian National Railroad to Russia to fight on the borders to stop they don't come to Iran. Reza Shah didn't accept that. Therefore, they created fake information that civilian Germans of Iran are fifth elements and they're all of them are Nazi. And this is entirely fake, entirely fake. However, I should admit that we should keep civilian Germans of Iran from real official officers of Germany in Iran. Two different topics, two different stories. So civilian Germans of Iran, they were understood the topic very late. The ambassador asked them leave Iran months ago before the invasion, but very close to the invasion, he understood many of them still are in Iran, told them, all of you from Iran come to become refugee in the Shemiran in the summer quarter of German embassy in Bolhak, because it was in frontier and neighbor to the Turkey embassy. And he promised them, I can help you to Turkey, you back to your country. But he didn't know that he will trap all of them. They came there, they stayed for around 7 to 9 weeks with all families, thousands of people in German, Shemiran, summer quarter of German embassy. But with the invasion of Iran, immediately the garden was surrounded by Soviet and British army with the help of Iranian police. On the territory of Iran, on the land of German, embassy, summer quarter, by force they separated mother and children from husbands. Send the men to the railroad to Bandar Shapur, and then they send them to deserts of Basra, which is temporary interrogation camp. They interrogate them, single men and those 14 families, on the deserts of Basra for 7 weeks. Mother and children stay in embassy and they send them with thousands of convoy in three different times, like prisoners escorted by Russian army through Tehran to Bazargan frontiers to send them to Turkey. But horrible history, and what they did to this mother and innocent children in Iranian territory by the help of Iranian police, but done by Russian army, is catastrophic, Andrew. Yeah. So mothers deported by force from Iran to Turkey, then they went to Denmark, Germany, Austria, stayed there until the war, under the bombing all these years, and they joined fathers in 1949.
So they were back. So the Wolf family was back then in Germany. They were one of the ones who went back to Germany. Okay, right.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right.
Mother with three babies.
Right. And then during the time that he had all the craft material, this was the material which you were referring to, which was in Tabriz, that he kept in Tabriz. So when he came back to Iran, what was his immediate reaction with that material in Tabriz? Did he go back and get it?
No. He didn't go to Iran. He came out of the camp in 1947 and worked for 2-3 years to get money to bring wife back here.
Right.
He received here in 1953 his collection from Iran directly before going to Iran. So they send it. It's a very beautiful story.
Right.
Then he could again recreate his research, go to university, Smithsonian, and, convince everyone, because they had no right to back to Iran. They were only 5 to 10, they could back to Iran and continue their work.
So the material for the book was based on the material he had gathered before the war, as well as...
Exactly. Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And all that then is there with you.
Master degree, PhD, book, all done by Reza Shah Project prior to the invasion of Iran.
Okay. And it resides with you now.
Yes, in
After
Western City
finishing.
University.
Okay, right. Okay. Well, that's fascinating also. And so
It's temporary. It's temporary, keeping. I'm grateful to Western City because no budget, no grant, because I had no time to do these things, and I'm alone, most importantly.
many thanks for staying up or getting up at this hour to give us this most interesting and enlightening talk. And with that, I wish everybody a good break. Hope everybody gets some sort of break, and we will see everybody again in January of 2024. Thank you, and good evening from Edinburgh up here, or down south in London, and good morning from Australia. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Andrew, and thank you again for everyone. I appreciate and I hope you enjoy the end of year and the festivities.
Thank you now. Good night. Good morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.